Chema. So both are oceans. How can ocean be compared to ocean? But nevertheless, we'll come straight away to the subject because it's a very vast. If one speaks for it, actually one can have a week-long workshop and still it won't complete. So what is interesting right away about both Savitri and Essays on the Gita, that they are both born in a, their birth is in a very strange way. That's why I rank them as very unique scriptures, not exactly like the way Upanishads came, you expect, you know, in a hermitage, typical setting, the disciples sitting at the feet of the master. And if you look at the outer world and the conditions, so we see that both are born when the dance of death is going around. So we see that the Gita is born when obviously there is a dance of death, and Savitri is born, it starts from 1916. And if we see the first two great wars, perhaps the only two great wars which between them, all the wars together in history would fall in insignificance. So during that time when there is the densest night, that is the time we see, just as Gita is being given to man, so Savitri is being given to man. Another very interesting aspect is that both come at the end of an age. So of course, I know people may say, how do you know that Kali Yuga has ended? Well, not going into that debate. But we know that Gita was given at the end of Dwapar, because a new age was dawning, and so mankind has to be given a scripture. These transitions can be very confusing, very disorienting, and that's what we see happened immediately in the aftermath of the war and even before that and extending for some time. So this, again, we are entering a new age, and at least we can see two things very clearly which mark a new age. Death of the old. All the old established ways of life, and that's what is in the Gita, Dharma Siglani. Dharma Siglani obviously is not about a religion. I mean, there were no religions in that sense. It's about how the same truths which were relevant and valid at some point become subject to, they get distorted by the human mind, just as Bhishma and Drona justified the disrobing of Draupadi. They were all, you can't say they didn't know about Dharma. So what more can be there as Dharma Siglani? And so we see that during this period, again during the time of, you know, previous century, all the great established values were totally getting distorted, which we all know. I need not go into that. So there was darkness at several levels, not just outer war, and whose effect we can see now. Now modernism, postmodernism are only words, but basically instrument through which an entire past was being destroyed. But during, when the past is being destroyed, something new is going to come. See, it's very interesting. In the Mahabharata war, who is the victor and who is the survivor ultimately, and who really gets the throne? If you really look at it, all the five Pandavas, they are not through normal birth. And so is Parikshit. He dies in the womb and comes alive again. As if it's a hint, something new is going to come, which is not carrying the extreme burden of the past. And so we see here also, Mother and Shubhendu speak of the new creation, and after 1956, 58, children are being born with a new chip inside them. So this is an age of transition during which Savitri as well as the Gita are born in a certain setting. Both move at the individual as well as the cosmic dimension and take us to the transcendent. Both of them have this amazing, that, you know, you can go into any detail of all these truths given in Savitri and the Gita. But what is hinted in the Gita is brought forward with a greater relief in Essays on the Gita. And what is brought forward in Essays on the Gita is developed to its ultimate truth in Savitri. And let's take a small little instance to understand. So in the Gita, we have these two opponents. On one side is the dharma, if you want to put it broadly speaking. On the other side is dharma, and we don't go into how and why and what, because that's a different subject altogether. But Mother recounts that how around 1944-45, this there in 12 years for reference, she saw that, you know, every time the supramental consciousness, the new consciousness would try to come down, the human consciousness just won't respond. She said it was as if they were totally unmindful, unconscious of what's happening around. She gives examples of us humanity. It's not about they or we or who were the, that's not important, but as a representative humanity. And then she says something very touching. He didn't blame them. Means us, you can say, all of us. He didn't blame them. Instead, he went down to fix the problem where it originates. So the problem originates in the inconscient, and the divine takes that burden up. So it's very beautiful that this time Shri Krishna, aka Sri Aurobindo, does not want to give us halfway solutions. After all, he did say, Sambhavami Yoge Yoge, I'll come again. Hinting that, look here, this is for the now, for the moment, it's good enough to take you through Kaliyug. But all my work is not done. That's how I look at it, Sambhavami Dharma Siglani. But how to fix the problem permanently? It cannot be until the human consciousness changes. So as Sri Aurobindo says in the Live Divine, that what we see as external crisis is essentially a crisis of consciousness. And that's what is brought out into its utmost bold relief. Sri Aurobindo hints that in Essays on the Gita, that it may look like a crisis of outer events, but primarily it's a crisis of consciousness. So the ultimate truth is brought out in completeness, in all its... So we have, for example, the antagonist here is not Duryodhan, not Bhishma, not Drona, but those who were that, under whose influence and spell Bhishma, Drona and all the great ones were under. That's how we see. You know, all these people were under the influence of whom? How could Bhishma, one wonders, how could he put a bandage over his eyes? How could Drona do the way he did? Why did Karna behave the way he did? So that is because at the core of things, there is this spoil sport. Of course, allowed by the divine. That's a different story. Again, each one of them is a wonderful... I'm lob sambaran kar raha hun. I'm not getting into it. But that is what is the falsehood that is planted deep at the very core of things. And the mother says, Sri Aurobindo gave it deep. She says, death is one of the aspects, but in Savitri, that falsehood is represented by death. And as we were just discussing, if you see death, all the different... philosophies and everything that you can imagine till now, death speaks of them. But there is a very subtle twist. And if you look at that twist, you get it that here is falsehood at play. It twists the truth. All of them are partial truths, but they are not falsehoods. We can't say that Brahman realization is falsehood. No. It is a partial truth. You have to go beyond. That the Gita also says that you have to go. That's something very, another very interesting aspect of the Gita, which... that's one reason why I speak of it as higher than the Upanishads. I may be, you know, burning some hearts. But what to do? Upanishads speak of the two Purushas, the mutable and the immutable. But the Gita brings out the Uttama Purusha, Purushottama, beyond the mutable and the immutable. There's something very beautiful. It's hinted there in the Vedas, hinted. But in the Gita, it brings out, it changes everything. It's not just a question of Uttamam Purusha. Because it means, if we have only Shar and the Akshar, the mutable and the immutable. Yeah, you can switch off. I don't need. Let's be fanned by the divine love. We can switch off all the fan. So, if you look at the difference, which in Savitri becomes very prominent, is that We have those devatas and gods and Sagun Brahman and Sakar forms as a path ultimately to the immutable Brahman, which is impersonal, vast, etc. You can't form a relationship, mind you, with impersonal Brahman. You can form relationship with the gods who can take you there. But what does the Gita say? The Purushottama. So it changes the poise of the human soul with the transcendent. That's something very beautiful. That we can relate. Brahman is unrelatable. The Sakar aspects are Sakar. Okay. Are relatable. Sakar is actually makes the Brahman relatable. Okay. But you can't say it's the highest reality. But there is this aspect now. The moment he brings in the life divine, he speaks at great length when he talks about, Purusha, Brahman and Ishwara, that this is so important. The Gita brings that, and the Savitri also brings that aspect of the divine. He is real. He is living. He is a being with whom we can connect. He is not just an impersonal vastness, infinity. He is that. He is eternal. But all that is held back in the being, which is something very amazing. Creation is an outflowing of that being through several lines. So anywhere, it's like so many streams. You land into anything. If you have the perseverance, you will end up flowing to the ocean. So these are all common elements, very beautiful common elements. But here we have something very interesting, that while there is the Uttama Purusha, there is a hint of Para Prakriti. Shri Krishna says, my Prakriti. So he says, I'll tell you about the Trigunatmak Prakriti, and now I'll tell you about my... No, rather he speaks about his Prakriti. He passingly mentioned Trigunatmak Prakriti. Later on he elaborates. He says, I'll tell you, that's the Sankhya. But now I will tell you about my Prakriti. And he starts speaking at great length. What a revelation it is. And how that Para Prakriti has become the Jiva, and he's entered into creation. Very beautiful things. How does Savitri express this? Savitri expresses how even in this finite world, even in this Prakriti, Para Prakriti is operating from behind. Even a hidden intelligence is at work. Something which today in science we do understand. Nature's most casual lolling is a poise. In nature's instruments loiters secret God. So completely the division is gone. It's they out of the para, this Prakriti has come. It's the original Vedic truth. I'm not going into, Ditya, Ditya. Again, time, we have to respect that. So there is that pressure. But what he brings, because now it's the Para Prakriti who has to be in the forefront because of a new creation. Dads can do everything except give birth to a baby. They have some role, but even that role, because now you can have test tube children, so that's gone. But to hold the baby, to nurture the baby, to nourish the baby, to deliver the baby is the mother's task. So we are at the juncture of a completely new creation. So Para Prakriti, which we have hinted in the Gita, the Divine Mother as one out of which the Jiva has emerged. That's why one of the signs Sri Aurobindo says that, how do you know that you have found the psychic being? There are several. Not that you know by the science checklist, I found the psychic being. This, no, it doesn't work like that. But one of the things is that the psychic being spontaneously recognizes the mother and feels love for her. Because it is a portion of the Divine Mother. Automatically, you don't have to say, she is the Divine Mother. It cannot. It knows. How you say, how do you know? How does a child recognize the mother? Now this relation between the Para, Prakriti, Jiva, Bhutasi, 1/4 sloka. How Sri Aurobindo elaborates. But since she knows the toil of mind and body and life, as a mother knows and shares her children's lives, she puts forth a small portion of herself, a being no bigger than the thumb of man, to face the pang and to forget the bliss. Immediately, it's like an awakening to our own self. There Shri Krishna has said the same thing. परा प्रकृति जीव भूता देनी से ये तद योनि ही आई एम द वन द वूम्ब ऑफ ऑल क्रीचर्स आई एम द फादर ही डजंट मस्ट टॉक अबाउट द मदर एक्सेप्ट दैट नाउ ही स्प्रिंग्स आउट यू नो समथिंग विच लेफ्ट आउट श्री कृष्णा हिमसेल्फ न्यू दैट देयर इज समथिंग लेफ्ट आउट देन वी सी दैट सावित्री इनफैक्ट श्योरबिंदो योगा इंटरेस्टिंगली बिगिंस वेयर द योगा ऑफ द गीता एंड्स After all about Swadharma and all those things, at the end the Gita comes up with its crowning Mahavakya, Param Vakya, if one may say, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja Aham Tva Sarva Papebhyo Mokshi Shami Masucha. So people often ask, what am I to do points given in Savitri? It's a book of yoga. So, of course, there are to-do points also. If you want to really take it as that, you know, Savitri's yoga is for man. That's how. You can't follow Shubhinda's yoga. Is like jump from one mountain to another mountain peak, from there to the galaxies. But the mother bridges all of them. So, if you can take it like that, that's how. But there is something simpler. That is not what Satyavan does. What does Satyavan do? When he ultimately meets Savitri, he recognizes she is the one who will bridge what I have been seeking. What does he say? See, it begins with that surrender of Satyavan. They are very beautiful lines, so I must. He says that, well, will you come with me? See how, when was the fate of Mahabharata sealed? It was sealed when Arjun made a crucial choice. Or rather, Duryodhan made a foolish choice. Let not the worldly prudence whisper too closely into thy ears, because it is the hour of the unexpected. He chooses the army. And Arjun says, thank God. He didn't choose you. He had placed such an odd against his own that there was no way Duryodhan would have chosen Krishna. He knows Krishna's might. But the moment he says, I'll be unarmed. Okay, done. Deal done. Okay, you do the deal, impose tariffs, doesn't matter. But wherever there is Krishna, there and wherever there is power, there is victory. So this we see in Savitri beautifully. Will thou not make this mortal bliss thy sphere? That's all he's saying. What is surrender? Descend, O happiness, with thy moon gold feet. Enrich earth's floors upon whose sleep we lie. We are in a state of tamas, physical consciousness. But your feet can awaken it, your feet can transform it. And now comes the crux of bhakti. He's not saying that Satyavan started jumping, dancing, playing kartal and doing bhajan. No. The crux of bhakti comes from the root bhaja, that the seeking soul takes joy in the divine and the divine takes joy in the seeker soul. That is bhakti. It comes from the root. Bhaja, bhunjita, all of them come from that same root. So he says, O my bright beauties, princes, Savitri, by my delight and thy own joy compelled. See, that's bhakti. There is no pulling, compelling, no. He says, I am taking delight in you. Will thou take joy in coming to me? Enter my life, thy chamber and thy shrine. That's it. That's the surrender. Surrender and freedom. And when the divine enters, Savitri says yes. And then we see something very interesting when all around death is there again. What does Arjun do? Arjun simply says, I am pretty confused. Shishyasteham sadhimam. And at the end he says, you tell me, I'll do accordingly. What does Satyavan do when he is face to face with death? It's described in Savitri when he is, you know, very beautiful, touching description. Again, I'm just holding back, otherwise it's an ocean. But Satyavan, he simply says, as he is falling down on the ground, he is feeling that this terrible pain. Clinicians will describe it as an acute heart attack. And I wish we all could do it. Of course, I wish we'd never had any heart attack. But he simply lies down and says, Savitri, Savitri, oh my Savitri, come. He says, kiss my lips. Perhaps that will bring me back to life. Now people, I am just addressing this as an aside, this question that has the victory over death been accomplished? Even physical death, we, you know, actually in medicine nowadays, and mother said, it's something very great that they have begun to accomplish. You know, when people resuscitate, what is it called? It's actually called the kiss of life. So, Shubhendu sometimes hints passingly things which are, you know, you have gone, but there is a time in which you can come back. Of course, people come back spontaneously also, but that's a different subject. Again, I'm not going into it. How physical death also, how much mankind has moved, and one can see from the time of Savitri till now. It's not like we have stopped dying. That's a different thing altogether. But every step forward in the conquest is a different thing. It's not like black and white. We were dying yesterday, we are dying today. Well, yeah. That's like saying that men were foolish yesterday, they are foolish today. Yes, that's true. But perhaps a little less foolish. That's how we describe the difference between an adolescent and an old person. You are a little less foolish. That's all. So, but that's a great gain. So here is, you know, he says that. And see, what does Savitri do? Just like when he says, I have surrendered myself to you. Then Shri Krishna shows that he is going to fight the battle. He has won the battle. Everything is there. He has to just to be an instrument. But here it is the Divine Mother. She doesn't say, Satyavan, hold on bravely. I am going to give you medical aid, revive you. Just hold on, somehow, nothing. He says, I'll take care. And the rest is so beautiful history. What level he takes the surrender, what level he takes the divine intervention, to what extent. Now, another thing which is very interesting, which I found in Savitri is, you know, it starts, Gita starts, I'm just talking of the two. There are many beautiful things in Savitri. So, but amazing, wonderful, there are no words actually. But see, Arjun goes through a crisis. And this crisis consists of a choice. The choice is either he fights the battle or he simply takes the easier path. The easier path is, I'll take sannyas, I'll, you know, go to a forest hermitage and do Bhaj Govindam, and life is like that, imperfect, all this. But here also we see Savitri facing a similar crisis. How she responds and where is the Krishna? People often ask, Are Arjun ka to theek tha, Krishna ji the. Somewhere he must have heard all these whispers, you know, they are asking. All these fellows are asking, where is my Krishna? Now you see how Savitri addresses this question. So, Savitri first asks that, you know, how can I fight this seemingly impossible battle? This is not battle against warriors. This is battle against death. Can she ever fight? So she says, my strength is taken from me and given to death. Why should I lift my hands to the shut heavens or struggle with mute inevitable fate? Both these epics address this question very, very with great clarity. And in fact, the birth of Savitri in the Mahabharata, as we all know, so I am not entering into that, is basically about the question of fate. That's how, you know, Rishi Markandeya addresses this problem. That is, there is somebody who has ever met a fate as bad as Draupadi? He says, yes, and conquered it. So this idea which came later on based on somewhere that, you know, we are supposed to be very fatalistic people, we believe in karma and, you know, whatever has happened, jo hua acha hua, jo hoga acha hoga, in the name of Gita, WhatsApp gyan. This is how, see, great truths can be twisted. I was mentioning, you know, how death twists. For instance, jo hua acha hua, jo hoga acha hoga. It's a truth. But the way it is presented is to encourage tamas. So what do I do? Well, nothing. So you see, there Savitri faces this dilemma. And she says, everything of mine has been given away. If Arjun had to, Arjun doesn't voice it like that. But he simply says, I can't fight against these fellows. It doesn't say you have given away your, you know, Akshayini Sena to them, Narayani Sena. Each of the warrior is like a Maharathi. Now you are putting me here and expect me to fight. He says, my strength has been taken and given away. How can I fight? What does Shri Krishna do? He exhorts Arjun, reminds him of who he is and his dharma of the moment, swadharma. So what does in Savitri? She hears a voice. So now you see, it's very interesting. Krishna is the immanent divine. If we really turn to him, or if we may say in Savitri, turn to her with earnestness, not with this hesitating idea, Ma sunegi kya? Not with this idea that maybe, or I'm not sure, can I trust? Then the mind will start mind games. But see how in Savitri itself we see the resolution. This is the human persona of Savitri. And there is in Savitri the divine self which has taken a human body. Again, another very interesting thing about both Savitri and the Gita, which is unique as far as scriptures are concerned. Once again, the Upanishads do not have it. It's the mystery and joy of the avatar. We can't just gloss over it that, you know, avatar is just a human conception given. No, it's something most important. In fact, if you remove the avatarhood of Krishna, you can't understand Mahabharata. Forget about everything else. It's absolutely illogical, probably insane. Similarly, if you remove Savitri, or in our context, Shobinda and the mother as the avatar, ushering the new age, how the thing is gone? In fact, the most important thing is gone. Why does Shobinda spend so much time on the doctrine of avatarhood, the purpose of avatarhood, the divine works? If you look at essays on the Gita, first time the joy and mystery of the avatar, and he says it's one of the great secrets. There are three great secrets in the Gita. One of them is the divine becoming human. And Shobhinda at great length answers it. It's an important thing because the avatar is the upholder of the next evolution. Next, if it all depends on, you know, which way he goes. So that's where we see that within us, this wrestle, and Savitri undergoes the human and the divine within her. Divine Mother, she says, why camest thou to this dumb, death-bound earth, this ignorant life beneath the indifferent skies, tied like a sacrifice on the altar of time, O Spirit, O immortal energy? If it was to nurse grief in a helpless heart, or with hard, tearless eyes await thy doom. This her own higher voice is telling her. It's like Krishna exhorting. Arjun, why have you come? You have come for this day? You have been prepared for this day? And he uses very sharp words, no? At this moment, you are showing Dorbalyam. Something very similar exhortation Savitri receives from within. Arise, O soul, and vanquish time and death. What powerful, majestic lines. Murde mein jaan aa sakti hai. Abhi to kaam pura nahi hua. I have not finished the work, you know. Anirvan, you must have heard. He had changed his name from Nirvanananda Swami or Nirvan Swami to Anirvan, because after reading the Life Divine, he realized that there is something beyond Nirvana. So he changed his name to Anirvan. He belonged to that tradition, but developed that faith in Mother and Sri Aurobindo. He is the one who translated the Life Divine in Bangla, and one of those from whom Hindi translation has been done. And it seems that when it was brought to Sri Aurobindo, he didn't even take a look. He said, give it to the press. So one day he tells all his disciples, he was a guru in his own right, that I want to leave the body. My time has come and I want to leave. Now, they didn't know what to do. They loved him. So they sent a telegram to the mother. Mother writes back, what? He doesn't want to do my work? The moment he receives the answer, okay, fine. Marna cancer. Have we finished? What we are here to do? Death can wait. That should be the spirit of the Indian, the Bharatiya, who has been steeped in this culture. Death doesn't exist. That's the message, ultimate message of the Gita. In the very second chapter it says, death doesn't exist. That's exactly what Savitri says. He says, I have given to you this awful, dreadful shape. You think you are somebody, but you don't exist apart from me. I have given you as a goad to be my instrument still. So there is no ultimate reality. So that's exactly what the Gita also says. So Savitri says that, well, that, you know, we have to, okay, she says, what need have I, what need has Satyavan to avoid the black meshed net, the dismal door, or call a mightier light into life's closed rooms, a greater law into man's little world? Keshava, what is the need? I don't need this kingdom. They are my brothers. Let them enjoy. Simple solution. The best way to resolve a conflict, we think, is not to face it. We do it all the time. Then what happens? The field shifts. That's what he says. You will sit on the side and like Achilles, your heart will be burning. I wish I was in the battle. That's what Achilles did. And then he was feeling constant heartburn. He says the same thing. He says, what is the need? Why should I fight? I can go into that and be forever. This surely is best to pactize with my fate and follow close behind my lover's steps and pass through night from twilight to the sun across the tenebrous river that divides, forgetting man and life and time and its hours, forgetting eternity's call, forgetting God. This is sannyas. Here, Shobindu, no? So, Sri Krishna upgraded. So, you see, so he is expressing, because there is the time and the joy, that's why he was perfecting it. But the problem is similar, that I want to avoid. This life is full of pain, suffering. For Arjun, because he is a sensational man, it is hitting him when it is face to face with the brutal reality of life. Savitri also faces that brutal reality and she wants to, you know, what's the point? When he dies, I'll also die. One day we all will die. So why all this kolavari? Jana ek din sab chale jayenge. So now I'll close with this, you know, because everything, as I said, of the Gita is there. Yeah, just the time constraint. So we have, for example, the Trigunatmak Prakriti. In Savitri, it's taken to what extent? He takes to the unity of the self and nature. The triple soul forces. He makes them as soul forces. If you really look at it, they originate in the soul. So many such wonderful things, when you see the description of the Akshar Brahm, everything is there and much more. So that's a different subject altogether. But in Savitri, we see that the yoga is given in 18 chapters. At the risk of sounding silly, and in a way it is silly, because when you compare things only externally, they are silly. But still it's interesting that the yoga is given to Savitri in 18 lines. So, I'm sorry. Well, but if you look at the yoga, the first thing in the Gita is Jnana Yoga. All the rest is later. Then you have the Karma and you have the Bhakti. All the three go together and Bhakti is the crowning. And then Arjuna is prompted to do the divine work, which that work is here, of course, to fight the great battle for the consummation of the march of mankind. That's the battle here. Here the yoga is given, page 476. It's elaborated at great length, so I'm not going into it. Some of my most favorite lines, which for maybe months and years I had taken out nicely, put it. You know, you won't read it, but at least you are glancing and you remember. So just as the yoga is given to Arjuna in 18 chapters, there is a lot of things he has to do. But we must understand here it's given to Savitri. Why? Because the difference is Savitri is doing the yoga for us. So that's a big difference. Shri Krishna was in a hurry, he can't, he says, almost hints that I have done everything. But he gives the yoga and at the end he says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja. But here it starts with the grand surrender. I will do the yoga, you collaborate. All these things are there in Savitri as well as the Gita, that the divine does the yoga. There is yoga of the earth. All that is there in Savitri, that how earth a yoga is going on. But hinted. For instance, when Shri Krishna says, I gave this yoga to the sun god, Vivaswan. And then I gave to, from Vivaswan it went to Manu to Ikshvaku. Then the solar king, then it was lost. So I am reviving it. So fundamentals of the yoga are the same. So here, man has to collaborate. Basically, if you see in the Gita also, God does the yoga, but it's not brought out in such a... Here, the mother says, and Savitri says, she will do the yoga for us. But you have to surrender. That surrender is literally baby cat. At the moment of death, Satyavan is not saying, Savitri, I thought you are a goddess. Please call 911. What has happened to me? Nothing. He says, if I die, let me die in your arms. That surrender. And sure enough, she takes care. So this is the beauty, that love and surrender, which are the culmination in the Gita, man man abhav madbhakta. At the moment of death, he is remembering nobody except Savitri. So here is the yoga. The voice replied, remember why thou camest. What's our swadharma? What am I here for? The purpose of life. Find out thy soul, recover thy hid self. Again, we see that the exhortation to Arjun, that you are thinking it's you who is killing and somebody is killed, but do you know who you are? You, me, there has never been a time when we were not or they were not, and never will be a time when we will not be there. Of course, the Gita is rushing through 2 hours time. It doesn't have more time because, Vaishnavi Maya has overcome Arjun, the warrior, and that was part of his plan, the Leela. In silence, seek God's meaning in thy depths, then mortal nature change to the divine. So just like Arjun, we may be well confused. Oh, you are speaking of silence, seek God's meaning, then why are you asking us to participate in work, activity? Arjun says, jnana is superior, you say. Then you are asking me to do this karma, which is deadly karma. He further takes it. Cast thought from thee, that nimble ape of light, in his tremendous hush stilling thy brain. His vast truth, wake within and know and see. This whole thing is about, first thing is to discover that divine truth within before you can be truly karma pravarta. Of course, you do through while engaging in karma. Cast from thee sense that veils thy spirit sight. So what does Sri Krishna teach him? In all this vibhuti yoga and all this. He says, Arjun, if you really look closely, you will see me everywhere and in everything. Even in the serpent, even in the scoundrel. What is it? Jua wale ka cleverness bhi main hu, something like that, he says. You will see me in every preeminence of nature. And then he says, Vasudevam sarvamiti samahatma cha durlabha. Samagram mam, that's the word Shurbindu uses. Now see how here it is given. Here it's a nutshell. It is elaborated at great length subsequently. Beautiful this is. In the enormous emptiness of thy mind, thou shalt see the eternal's body in the world. That's the importance of the manifestation. We can't run away from the manifestation. Is being is becoming. We can't run away. This is too is he extending himself. So, know him in every voice heard by thy soul. All things in the world's contacts meet his single touch. All things shall fold thee into his embrace. See how he is preparing him. Now that jnana is becoming vijnana, extending into everything. The great vision, yoga and its object, this is the first step Shurvindu advises. To see the divine in everything and everywhere. And that's why when people start seeing hostile forces everywhere, I say, bhai, yoga kuch ulta disha mein ja raha hai. Because we are supposed to see the divine. Hostile forces have their own place and reality, like everything else. But when you see the Naga, also see Shiva behind. Otherwise it can be very confusing. So we do pranam and say Vasuki. That's how Shri Krishna teaches us that, you know, in everything there is the divine presence. Here he is taking us to what level? In all the world's contacts. Conquer thy heart's throbs, let thy heart beat in God. There is never a better description of bhakti. Bhakti is not just about throwing emotions all around in the atmosphere. It's okay if the vessel is narrow and restless, that's what happens. It's something so deep. You may apparently be engaged with the whole world in different kinds of relationship. But deep inside, as Sri Aurobindo says in one of his aphorisms, to commit adultery with God, this world was perfectly created. We owe to the world something by way of duty. So people who will see outside, they will think, ah. But deep inside, all your love is only for your paramour and beloved. That paramour and beloved is the Divine Mother. She says, conquer your heartbeats. Thy nature shall be the engine of his works. Then, Arjuna, I will use you. It's not like I want to become an instrument of God. When you have conquered your heart throbs, when you love the divine unconditionally, when you have won that knowledge, then you are ready for the mother's. Often people say mother's work. So there are narrow definitions of mother's work. They have their own validity. Nothing is invalid. But the greatest mother work is the work that goes on inside us. And then whatever we may be doing, sarva karmani, thy nature shall be the engine of his works. Thy voice shall house the mightiness of his word. Then shall thou harbor my foes and conquer death. So this is just not even a fringe, but Savitri is joy, the Gita is joy, all of them are joy. But for this new age, for the transition from man to the new creation, because that's not there in the Gita, let's be very clear, the transformation of nature is not there. There is the conversion of consciousness, which is a thing which is different, of the inner being primarily. The transformation of instruments is not there. Just offering your instrument to become whatever the divine can use. The transformation of gunas is not there. The gunas are there, and the Gita clearly says that, well, Arjun, you will have to operate. This is your operating system. Don't look for a bigger, better computer with better software. This is your software. But you just give yourself, I'll do whatever is needful. But now Sri Aurobindo speaks of the upgrading of the software, the transformation of guna, the upgrading of the hardware, the transformation of the instruments. And of course, the battle is not simply a battle between dharma and adharma, but it's a battle for the very life of the world, of creation. It is a battle where all is won or all is lost for man. So that's where we see we stand today. And of course, the Divine Mother. I love the Gita because from childhood my first love was Sri Krishna. But I always feel mother is not here. So mothers are always special, you know, for all. Yes, Krishna is lovable, but mother is mother. You can tell anything to her. So divine has come as mother. So once again, they are not people. Often see Krishna and Sri Aurobindo as if, no, they are not tender. We should see it is the same Supreme coming as Krishna's, but now because times have changed, we have evolved a little bit. Definitely we have evolved beyond. I keep saying, oh, have we evolved? Of course we have evolved. We don't do that what Duryodhana and all these fellows were doing. We don't, you know, that's horrible. I mean, they are noble people. It's happening in the court. Imagine in Vidhan Sabha if this happens. We don't do that in, you know, Of course, the average person was in the age of Rama and in the age of there. But today, that's why you want the average person to change. So that's where we see that we have the collective yoga. First time collective yoga has been given to man. Shri Krishna hints at collective yoga when he says the Lok Sangrahart. But he doesn't say where is this Lok Sangrahart, the collective march of mankind going. So the collective yoga aspect is there. And of course, as I said, most importantly, the Divine Mother is there. Because whenever there is a new creation, that it will come out of the Divine Mother has to be the mediator. So for the first time, we have the story of the avatar telling us the other side. We have all the avatar who are, masculine in the highest sense, not in the... But first time, the woman has always stood behind Sita, behind Rama, and Radha behind Krishna, and Sujata behind Buddha, and Mary Magdalene behind Christ, and so on and so forth. And even I would say, and I can prove the point, but this is not the time, that behind Parshuram there is Renuka Devi. But first time we have that the mother is in the forefront, and Sri Aurobindo stands behind us, hinting that a new age has become, which where Shakti will be the prominent one, and ye all men wake up to this new reality. Every time you meet a woman, say, Hey Devi, Ya Devi, Sarva Bhuteshu. Learn to see in her the Divine Mother, Jema. Learn to see the Divine Mother in all, man or woman. Jema. Thank you.